Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. Today is June 13th, 2014. I'm Mark Shaw, broadcasting live from New York City, and I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I also speak with authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have really great things to say. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. So I'm very excited about tonight's show because I'm going to be talking with an interesting man, Larry. Larry Klopek ran the Boston Marathon this year. And as anybody who's run a marathon knows, that's quite a feat for just about anyone who does it. But a little bit more so for Larry, because most people have two legs to run with. Larry has only one. His leg was amputated when he was 7 years old due to cancer. And now at 54 years old, Larry is an athlete with 8% body fat who runs an 11-minute mile. If that doesn't inspire me to run a marathon, nothing will. And he's inspired his wife, Jen, to take up running. He's even inspired a former NFL football player to run his first marathon. So Larry is a marathon runner like no other. So tonight I have with us Mr. Larry Klopek himself, and also his wife Jen will be joining us about halfway through the show as well. And we're going to get her point of view about what an inspiration Larry is as well. And they actually will hear about how much of an inspiration each of them is to one another. So, so Larry, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm really great. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Certainly. Certainly. So, so Larry, tell us a little bit about, first of all, before we kind of back up to the beginning for you, just kind of give us a brief overview of what made you decide to run a marathon on crutches as an amputee?
Good question. My wife, about 4 years ago, ran her first marathon, and at that time, I had only had gone and participated and competed in 10Ks. And while I watched her compete and did extremely well in her first marathon, I told her afterwards, I said, you know what, I've got to try a half marathon. So I spent that summer preparing for a half marathon down at Virginia Beach at the Rock and Roll down there. And did that, and then spent the last 3-4 years or so running halves. Then I said to myself, maybe I can do a full marathon. So a year ago, year and a half ago, I committed. I told my wife, I said, let's do it. Let's do it together. Let's train together. And we put together a training plan about 4 or 5 months ahead of the race, which was the Rock and Roll Marathon here in D.C. And we successfully completed that that race. And, you know, I said, my first and last marathon, I was happy with that, no qualms about it. And 3 or 4 months later, a colleague of mine from the, a former colleague of mine from the National Cancer Institute, Bob Yarshawan, ran into both Jen and I one Sunday morning. He was finishing running. We were going to a yoga class, of all things. And we were talking about running, and I had mentioned to him that I had completed my first marathon. And he, during the conversation, indicated that, you know what, I think you might have qualified for Boston. Let me check it out. So that afternoon, he sends me a lengthy email saying, you did qualify. And so the bottom line is, I looked at Jen and I said, we've got to do it, you know, especially in light of what transpired in 2013 up in Boston. We had to do it. And so I registered last October, started preparing last December for the April race. And long and behold, we were very fortunate not to go through. It was a very tough winter to train, as you are well aware. And we were able to get through it and get through it injury-free and be able to run the race on the 21st of April.
Wow. That's just totally amazing and inspiring. And, you know, when I first connected with you to do this interview, I just couldn't believe that something like that was possible. And just hearing you talk about it is just really incredible to me. So let's back up a little bit to age seven. So what happened for you at age seven that led to the amputation?
That was 1968, to be honest with you, and that was the year I was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, which is a form of bone cancer. And back in those days, the rate of survival was quite low, and you really you did not have chemo back then. I had some radiation and surgery, so I was very, very fortunate to survive that procedure. And I'm here today to kind of prove a point to say the least to other cancer survivors that yeah, you can overcome cancer and can still live a fulfilling life.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. And it's interesting, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, is because a lot of what my work is about as a life coach and as a business coach as well is about overcoming those personal obstacles to have the life that you want, and it's not so much, I mean, it's partly, of course, what happens to us and those external things, but how we respond to those events in our lives really are what cause us to either be at the effect of life or at the cause of life. And you are just a role model for millions of people, literally, Larry, being at the cause of your life. So it's just really great. What was it like as a seven-year-old boy to hear that you're going to have your leg amputated? Because I understand that you didn't know that until the night before the surgery.
That certainly is my recollection, Mark. And, that's always a tough situation for a parent to have to make. You know, how far out do you tell a child? And whether they're,
sure,
that they're going through surgery and that they're going to have a leg or an arm amputated. I think it's a tough decision even today, 40-some years later, for parents that are confronting the same situation. I think there's a heck of a lot of more information out there, and I think more parents feel that they are much more knowledgeable about cancer and the procedures and that are out there, and I even think kids are probably are better aware of what they're going through than what I went through, back in 1968. Cancer was a scary thought for a lot of people at that point in time. The fatality rate was quite high, very high, and people were also scared of that cancer was contagious to a certain degree, much like AIDS back in the 1980s. So, for a parent, it is probably a very, very difficult decision.
Oh, I can't even begin to imagine. Do you remember feeling scared or upset? What emotions do you remember running through your mind in the hospital that night as a child?
Certainly, when I found out about it, it was hard to comprehend personally. And again, this was 46 years ago, but it was something that in order to save my life or have a chance to save my life, This was surgery that was a necessity, something that obviously needed to be taken care of if I had any chance of survival. And I'm sure I was pretty damn scared, no question about it. But it was something that I was reassured, by my family and by many doctors that I was going to be able to pull through.
Mm-hmm. Wow, great. What was it like for you now as you were kind of growing up and, a couple of years later, that, you of course, were very different in middle school from the other kids. And kids can be really unkind about those kinds of things. I know that you wore a prosthetic at one point, but you stopped doing that after a while. What did it feel like in middle school being different?
Definitely, you notice the difference, and you want to fit in. There's no question about it. Especially in middle school, at that age, everybody is very self-conscious about how they look, obviously, I was different from everybody else in my class and in my school, and I'm also an extremely, and the people that know me, I'm extremely competitive. And despite my disability, I always gave it 110%. I was gung-ho in PE, and, I was very fortunate also to have a lot of neighbors that were close to my age that were very, very supportive. And I grew up, playing basketball on our driveway with everybody else, football, any of the other types of sports that were out there. I might not have been able to compete at the high school level, but I was still fully participatory in all the sports that we played in the neighborhood. And, it goes back to proving my point, to proving a point that, I can do it despite a limitation, despite a disability, that I can still do it. I might not be as fast as everyone out there, but hell, I'll still finish it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's interesting. You've mentioned several times about proving a point, and I know that later when we bring Jen on, we're going to talk about her work as a coach and her whole idea around each of us having a why it matters. And I know that that's very much related to you. Yours is really about proving a point. So I just want to kind of put a little bookmark there so that we can come back to that, because I hear how strong a value that is for you. Because I think you said it about three times already this evening. So that shows me that that's really strong. It's like you're out to prove a point, and a very valuable one, and one that people with struggles similar to yours or any other major struggle, and even people without those, can certainly benefit from and learn from. I love your spirit, and that's one of the things, Larry, that I noticed about you when we first talked on the phone, and then, of course, when I had the wonderful opportunity to meet you and Jen for dinner two nights ago. And your spirit is great. Your drive is just amazing. And your drive to compete, particularly in sports, of course, like I said, is inspiring. How did you originally get involved in sports? Because I know you're quite the sports addict, aren't you?
I am. I'm a little addicted to sports, and I grew up in a neighborhood.
It's one of the better things to be addicted to if you have a choice.
Quite true. I grew up in a neighborhood that had a lot of kids, either a couple years older than me, a couple years younger than me. We were all out there all day long playing basketball, playing kickball, whatever the case may be. And then when I got to high school, I was also quite involved with football, basketball, as well as baseball, and was a manager for those teams during the 3 years in high school. And actually, this past spring was the first year in 20 years that I have not either coached baseball or basketball. And I'm just one of those individuals that one of my outlets is is coaching as well as physical fitness. I'm a big fitness buff. I love to run 3 days a week. I love to work out in the weight room 3 days a week. Bottom line is that is a big part of me, Mark.
Wow, it's amazing. I just love hearing it. I get to listen to you talk, it's just great. So I know that this entire your entire life around sports and as an amputee has really It's really revealed to you a calling that you have in life. Tell me a little bit about the calling that you've uncovered as part of your life experience.
Okay. You know, one of the organizations that I'm heavily involved in is Special Love Incorporated, which is a nonprofit that's based here in the metro area that provides activities for children and young adults with cancer. They were created back in 1983 by a mother and father who lost their daughter to cancer, Tom and Sheila Baker. And they started this program, and it started off as a one-week camp called Camp Fantastic and has grown into a year-round calendar of events that actually has a week-long camp for cancer patients between the ages of 7 and 17, for the siblings of the cancer patients, as well as a number of other weekends that are either targeted toward the cancer, a teenage cancer patient, a young adult cancer patient, maybe the cancer patient and their families. So I've been the longtime director of the young adults program, as well as a volunteer for a lot of the other programs and also a board member of the organization. And that really has been an organization that has been near and dear to my heart and, you know, an organization that has just done such good deeds toward many, many cancer patients, siblings, as well as the other, as well as the parents of the cancer patient. And, you know, again, you know, I'm actually in a week going to be heading down to Southern Maryland for what we call our brass camp, our brothers and sisters camp, and spending a week down there. And that's been one of my favorite activities for many a years. And I also I also do some informal counseling of wounded warriors. As you know, I work at the National Institutes of Health, and right across the street is Walter Reed National Medical Center, and I work out over there, and a lot of the wounded warriors are also working out in the gym. So I can talk to them about my personal experience. And granted, it's not I didn't lose a limb to a blast or an ambush in Iraq or Afghanistan, but I've lost a limb, and I can talk to them a little bit about my experiences and be able to tell them, you know, a lot of them that life is not over. You know, you can still participate and be a fully functioning member of society, and, you know, sports is a heck of a way to be able to get back into it, you know, step by step. And, you know, a lot of these sports nowadays are modified for individuals that have a disability, whether you're a paraplegic, whether you're a single amp or you're a double amputee, you can still snow ski, water ski, you name it, you can still do it.
So, wow. So what's it like for you? Like what do you feel and what do you get out of helping out other people, whether it's, you know, kids and young adults, or if it's the wounded warriors? What emotions does it bring up for you that you experience when doing it, and what do you get from the experience?
You know, back in the day, back 40 some years ago, we never had organizations like Special Love to help us or assist us in going through the cancer experience. You know, it was quite a long time before I actually even met an individual that lost a limb to cancer. And now, you know, you've got the internet that's out there. You've got many different types of websites, different organizations that are out there that can provide that insight that actually was missing for me. That was something that I didn't come across. In junior high and in high school, there was not another amputee. We had a couple of other disabled individuals in my high school, but not other amputees. So it was a long time before I met another amputee, and it would have been nice to have met an amputee when I was 7 or 8 and to see what he or she was going through and their thought process and how did they adapt. Were they wearing a prosthetic, or did they use crutches? You know, it's one of those things that you know, nowadays I think it's a little easier. Not saying it's still difficult to go through the transition, but I still think you've got a lot more resources available to you than you had 45, 46 years ago.
Sure. So, how old were you when you actually first met another amputee?
Wow, that's a good question. I would venture to say that that's a darn good question. I might have met somebody informally at a clinic when I was getting my prosthetic made, but those were very informal conversations, no in-depth conversations that you have with fellow amputees that you have, for example, at Special Love for some of those weekends or week-long camps. You know, it was just in passing, Mark, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think I met my true leg amputee until probably my college years.
Wow. Wow, I can only begin to imagine the isolation of feeling like you're the only one, you know. And is that how it felt?
You know, again, I fall back to family and friends that were around me and surrounding me and supporting me with every step that I took. And I, you know, I think at times, absolutely, you were flustered. No question about it, I was flustered. And there were some down moments, I will admit to that. But I think on the whole, I was surrounded by a lot of positive vibes coming from a lot of people. And that certainly helped me through, especially maybe in some of those areas, some of those times. And I said, you know what, I wish I was out there on that football field and showing them what I could do. Or on the basketball court, showing them what I could do with two legs.
Sure. Sure. Wow. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I didn't even think of that in all the talking that we've done leading up to today about that experience of just not having ever met anybody like you, you know, like yourself, and really feeling the isolation that might come along with that. I mean, I know that I volunteer weekly on the LGBT National Hotline and talk with a lot of people, young adult kids, that often feel like they're the only one in the world who has the feelings that they're experiencing as a gay person. And it's so enlivening for them to know and to be able to connect through the Internet with other people, you know, that are like them. So it's like, you know, whatever your situation, it doesn't feel good to feel like you're alone and the only
one,
you know, who's like you. So I can relate to those feelings from that regard, and it just didn't even dawn on me until you said that. And I'm quite touched by that. The Internet has just been so amazing for us to be able to connect and
Facebook
and not
feel
Facebook alone.
In particular, Mark. I'm sorry, but Facebook in particular, I think that's a great source for a lot of people because there are so many different types of groups out there that you can search for. And, you know, again, computers were not even in existence back in my days growing up.
Yeah, no, that's right. In fact, I remember in high school, the computer we had it took up half a room and it had terminals attached to it with rolls of paper, and there was no Internet. Anyway, it was just a big computer, you know, and my computer teacher actually told us that one day in the future, probably in our lifetimes, we're going to have little computers that we hold in our hands that we can even talk with people on. And we were like, yeah, right, that just sounds ridiculous, you know, and here we are doing exactly that. I'm even broadcasting this show from one of those, from my iPhone. So it's pretty amazing. so great. You know, you're doing such great stuff. I'm so inspired to hear about Special Love Incorporated. I think, you know, organizations like that that do such good work, and it's just great that they have somebody like you who can use your experience to help make a difference for other folks. Do you think, Larry, that it was easier? I don't know if it was the word easier because it wasn't easy, but would it have been worse to lose your leg as an adult or as a 7-year-old child? That's a challenging question for you. Which do you think would have been harder or worse in some way?
Hey, Mark, can I just revert back to your other question for a second when I first really truly dealt
sure.
with an amputee? Because I'll take that back and say it was my senior year in high school. There was an organization now called Disabled Sports USA. It's been in existence since the early 70s, and they actually taught me to be able to snow ski on that one leg using outriggers. And the gentleman that taught me was an amputee. He was a Vietnam vet. He is now the CEO for that organization, Kirk Bauer. And you know, that was one of those moments that just came to me when you were talking. And so it was mm-hmm. it was in high school that you know, when I first really had my first true contact with another amputee who was showing me how to be able to adapt to a sport as an amp.
Wow. Great. So your senior year in high school, and those are such impressionable years too, to our identities as adults. So great. So so do you think it would have been worse to lose your leg, Larry, as an adult, or do you think that losing it as a kid somehow had advantages over losing it as an adult, if you had to have made such a choice?
Yeah, that's another good question, and I'm sure, you know, if you ask a number of individuals, it could be 50-50 either way. But personally, I think it was probably easier to lose it as a young kid as mm-hmm. opposed to a teenager or a young adult, to be quite honest mm-hmm. with you. And the reason being is now I've been able to adapt and grow up. You know, when I played basketball outside as a kid, I hopped. I didn't use crutches. I hopped. And I think I developed, you know, an unbelievable sense of balance on one leg. You know, when I play volleyball, I stand up and play it. Or I can even play sitting volleyball. But, you know, the bottom line is I developed such a good balance at such an early age that I think uh-huh. it made it much easier for me to participate in different types of activities because of that than if I were 16 years mm-hmm. of age and lost my limb, or 25 and lost a limb. And I think from an emotional standpoint, to be quite honest with you, it might have been a little easier too to be a teenager mm-hmm. to lose a limb. That is tough. What happens, for example, if you're the quarterback of a football team or the star
right.
center of a basketball team, and then you get that diagnosis of cancer, or you're in a car accident and you lose a limb,
mm-hmm.
and then just trying to readjust to life as an amputee at 16, to me, that's much more difficult. And talking to other amputees, I think they would mostly agree with me, too, on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so, too. I mean, just especially somebody like you who's a sports addict, right? Because you would have been a sports addict even if you hadn't gone through the amputation. So sports would have been an incredibly central part of your life, and then it would have felt like for quite some time that you can never play sports again, you know?
Yeah,
and if that's what your
absolutely.
Life is about and that's what you identify with, that's horrible. That's horrible to say you can never, ever do again what you're passionate about. So you actually, you didn't have to go through that piece of it. It was, this is the way you always played sports.
And, Mark, it's interesting that you bring that point up, because that's one of the key things that a lot of these wounded warriors are going through in their mind, that, hey,
sure.
my God, I can't, you know, and a lot of these individuals are in the prime of their life. A number of them were athletes in high school, very good athletes in high school, and they're wondering now, how am I able to adjust? How can I go back and play basketball, or how can I go back and be a long-distance runner, or whatever the case may be? And that's what you're seeing, and that's what's psychologically been tough on a lot of the wounded warriors.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. I can't imagine that. It's a shock, and it's almost like, you know, you go through life with it being that way, and it's kind of eventually becomes all you ever really knew, at least all you ever really knew in your adult life. So it is what it is, you know. And it's amazing when you see kids with cancer coming through terrible events and whatnot, how they adjust, and, you know, we're always inspired by that. It's kind of like their spirit doesn't dim, you know, it may initially, but then you see these kids and it's like they can't not grow into who they were meant to be regardless of their circumstance. It's like it's going to come through in some way, shape, or form, if not even bigger than it might have if they didn't have the trial that they went through.
Yep. Their spirit and determination, there's no question.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. So I want to – I have a couple more questions for you. We also have a caller with a question. I just want to take a quick sort of commercial break just to talk about some other things that are coming up here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So let's see. At 8 p.m. tomorrow evening, we've got Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca, and Reverend Jen's usual spiritually oriented show. That's tomorrow night at 8 p.m. here on the Life Coach Radio Network. And then the following night, Tuesday night, also at 8 p.m. on the 15th, is our usual New You City Chat with Danielle Mercurio. She helps people discover and explore whatever's going on as they adjust to their new digs when they move to a new city. We will also be taking your calls here, by the way, on the show later this evening. The number to call is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. And then, of course, my show is the first and third Sunday of every month, so I hope that you'll join us for the next show, too. And I also just want to give a quick plug, too, for a live workshop event and also webinar. It'll actually be both, so people can attend either way, that I'll be doing in New York on September 9th and 16th. So this is for all of you listeners out there that are coaches and you like assessments and other tools to do with your clients, to use with your clients. So some of you who know, I am certified in what's known as the Core Values Index, which is a revolutionary human assessment that provides a description of the innate unchanging nature of an individual, which is different from personality and behavioral-based assessments. It's a unique instrument that takes 10 minutes or less to complete. It provides a highly accurate and reliable picture of core motivational drivers of any person with an instant report online. You can actually take a free version of the CVI on my website at markshaw.com. Just click on the Assessments tab, and you'll see the link to take the CVI, and then you'll also receive a special offer for a discounted one-on-one private debrief session if you'd like. And basically, for coaches who are interested in being certified in such an assessment, we'll be doing a live training that I will be leading. It will be in New York in Midtown Manhattan. You can attend live or by webinar. It'll be two-hour sessions on September 9th and September 16th, both from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So if you want more information, you can go to my website. And you can read about it on the seminars and events page, which once I update will have the correct dates on it. Currently it says July 17th. I've actually gone ahead and moved it because there were people that wanted to do it that just couldn't make the date, and I figured I'd move it. So that's what we're doing. So just ignore that date, but you can see everything else on there. So I encourage you to go and take a look at that. So we are here talking with Larry Klopek. Larry is an amputee who ran the Boston Marathon last year, and we're all very inspired by Larry, and it's been a really, really great conversation so far. And we're going to have Jen join us in just a few minutes. Jen is his loving wife, and who also motivates and inspires him just as much, I'm sure, as he motivates and inspires her. So Jen's going to be joining us in just a few minutes. I wanted to ask you, Larry, when I asked you a couple of weeks ago, what are some of the craziest questions that you get asked? You said that probably one of the craziest ones is, what do you do with your other shoe? So I laughed, and I said, actually, that's a really good question. What do you do with your other shoe? And I loved your answer. I think it's amazing. So if you could tell us, and you talked about Facebook, you could tell us about the Facebook page that you've created to connect amputees for that and other purposes.
Yeah, actually, I get that question quite a bit from individuals. What do you do with that left shoe? And I actually created, and it's a small little Facebook page, my other left foot, and advertised my shoe on that Facebook page, and found a soulmate in Wyoming, of all places.
Soulmate, I love it.
And so we are very, he's an amputee, he does not wear a prosthetic, and I go through quite a bit of running shoes, probably at least one every 3 months or so. And so I will send him my other running shoe. He actually even sent me an email back saying, hey, I don't need any more running shoes. So I'm looking for another person. So check my Facebook page out, my other left foot. But it's one of those things that, you know, that's one of the most common asked questions that people ask.
Wow, that's great. And by the way, you know, it's funny, since you told me that, and I've been talking to people about you and I've mentioned that, I actually learned that I believe it's Nordstrom's will sell one shoe. They will also sell two different size shoes if someone needs that. So I meant to tell you that in case you didn't already
Thank
know.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. I knew that they sold two different size shoes, but I did not know that they would only sell one shoe. So it's something good to know.
Yeah, that's what this person told me. So something I haven't verified that, but this person seemed pretty sure of that. So, so it's very possible. Although I like your solution better than buying just one. So that's really great. That's very inspiring. And I love soulmate, I guess, spelled S-O-L-E, huh?
Yes.
Wow. Well, you know, I guess when you and Jen go out dancing, she can't tell you you've got two left feet.
Quite true.
So, well, very good, very good. So so before we actually bring Jen in, which I'm very excited to do, we actually have a caller, and I want to see what question the caller has. So I believe caller from Maryland, from the 301 area code. You're on the air on Mark My Words. What's your question for us?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show. My name is Soa Pauls, and I am a very dear friend of Larry and Jen. I'll tell you a little bit about myself and how I first met Larry. I was playing baseball in about 6th or 7th grade, and Larry was coaching my team. And from that point forward, Larry and I developed a very good friendship. And some things, if you had to ask me what come to mind to describe Larry Klopak, definitely a coach, a mentor, and a friend. So Larry, you know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, for all of the people that you've impacted in your life, you know, what are some of the things, and to back up a little more, when I think of Larry, Larry and I grew up in the same neighborhood. He was always at every sporting event at our high school that he graduated from, as well as I did. You know, he Wow. was in the community. He showed up to all of the events. And if you go around our neighborhoods, or if you're involved in a special love event, or throughout NIH different activities, Larry knows everyone. There's not someone that hasn't crossed Larry's path that he hasn't forgotten. Now, I wanted to, you know, give Larry an opportunity to speak to what impact has being a person who has such a great presence and has overcome so many obstacles in his life, you know, what impact does that help nurture the relationships that you've developed over the years? And in the sense of a community, regardless of sports teams or affiliation with different amputee foundations or cancer foundations, you know, just in a very generic sense, you know, what has your experience, the consistency of how you approach your life, both personally, professionally, and philanthropically, you know, if you could talk to that a little bit.
Hey, Philip. Good to hear from you, buddy. No question about it. And Mark, just to let you know, Philip is also a counselor at our brass camp, and he has been for a number of years. He recently moved down to Charlotte, so we won't see him in 2 weeks, but he's an awesome individual, and we go back a number of years. So he's a great person. So it's good to hear your voice, man. Good question, too. I knew you were going to always try to throw me a curveball, man. I think what I want to prove, and Mark, as Philip had mentioned, I've been quite involved with the community around where I grew up. I live about a mile and a half from where I grew up, so I'm in the same school district, quite involved with our Potomac Community Center. I chair the advisory board there. It's just one of those things that I think my point that I'm trying to convey to people is that, you know, get involved, give yourself, put out 110%. I have issues with individuals that come back home from work and sit around, sit on the couch and do nothing. There are so many organizations that have a need for individuals, you know, an extra hand and so forth. And, you know, I found my organizations through my cancer experience being Special Love, but also coaching with my love for sport. But, you know, I've also branched out a little bit more and done the community center, but it involves, you know, activities from A to Z, which includes sports up there. But, you know, I've chaired that board for 20 years. And, you know, I'm trying to tell people that, you know, get involved, give back. You know, that's the key thing. And I'm hoping I'm giving, you know, giving back to the people in the community. I'm hoping I've been able to set an example for a lot of people that way.
Great, and you do say
Mark. I have one more question for Larry.
Sure.
Now, I had the opportunity of seeing Larry and Jen run in the Boston Marathon. I saw him at mile 10 in Natick, Massachusetts. Larry, if you could just describe what it felt like as you and Jen approached the finish line and just the response. I know I saw it on TV, but if you could just describe the response from the crowd when you and Jen were getting ready to approach the finish line. What was that like?
Tearjerker. It was definitely one of the top three moments of my life. There's no question about it, Philip. And, you know, I'd be able to see you at mile 10 and to see how supportive you were to come up there and others, and just the million people that came out to the streets to witness this marathon and this special marathon in 2014 because of what happened in 2013. I tell you, I had tears in my eyes. You know, I was just overwhelmed with the crowd support. I was very fortunate that, you know, a lot of runners will tell you, especially when you run a marathon, that you hit a wall. And I will tell you that I never hit that wall. And I don't know if it was because of training, but I truly believe it was mostly from the crowd and the support the crowd gave me and gave Jen as we ran through the suburbs of Boston into downtown Boston. I have never experienced anything like it. I've been to Virginia Beach. I've been out there to Arizona. I've been to D.C. These crowds were out of control. unbelievable how supportive they were, and it pushed us through. It really did.
Wow. Great question, Phil. I'm glad you asked that. I was getting to that question, but you just got it just at the right time, actually. So I really appreciate that. That's great. And I'm sitting here, actually, my eyes are watering as I'm hearing you answer that, Larry. Wow. So great.
Thanks for those questions, Philip. You know I love you, buddy.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Mark, for having me on the show. You truly have an amazing guest tonight.
Well, thank you for calling in, Philip, and thanks for your support. Really appreciate it. Great. So let's bring Jen in. I want to hear Jen's perspective. So, Jen, are you out there?
I am, Mark. Hello. How are you?
Good. Welcome to Mark My Words.
Thank you.
And,
it's a pleasure being with you this evening.
Yes, and a pleasure being with you, too, as it was being able to spend the evening with both you guys in person the other night. I loved meeting both you guys. It was just great. And so, Jen, one of the things that I know from you about Larry is that, you know, Larry's a pretty humble guy. And, you got a couple of other things to add about how amazing he is. And since you're married to him, I'm sure you're probably the best person to comment on that. So tell us a little bit about tell us about Larry from your point of view. What hasn't Larry told us due to his humbleness that you really
my goodness.
Love about him?
There's so much. Oh, my goodness. We only have, I don't know how much more time left. There's just so much, and I really could go on for an hour, and I'm being honest with you. When, you know, Larry was sharing his story, he was even being humble in the beginning, saying that I inspired him to run his first marathon. But what Larry didn't share with you was that he even got me into running initially. So it was actually through him and his just dedication and perseverance to taking care of his own body physically, he got me motivated to start running. And actually, I lost about 30 pounds or so from taking up the sport. And it's
wow.
Just been back and forth, us inspiring each other with the running, but just so many other things. I mean, Larry lives large. He truly does. And when we first got together and I moved down into the community, going to the grocery store with Larry was a big ordeal. And I'm being honest with you, like Philip said, Larry's known everywhere. So a grocery store outing would take an hour and a half as opposed to 45 minutes or a half an hour, because Larry, everyone would stop and talk to Larry and thank him for something or inform him about something or just whatever. And that's just the type of person he is. You're just immediately drawn to him. You really are.
Yeah. No, and I got that in person. He's very personable, very inviting, very warm, very approachable. So, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean,
how did you guys meet originally?
That's a great question. We met in Ocean City, Maryland. My parents have a beach condo, and his parents have a beach condo. And I got to say, his beach condo is oceanfront. Mine was ocean block. And my dad and I and my mom were sitting out on our balcony, and my dad would make comment. He said, Jen, every day around 4 o'clock, you know, when we're coming back from the beach, eating brownies, drinking a beer, you know, just being that typical kind of lazy self Larry was talking about, like when people come home from work. Larry's out climbing the stairs, like running up the stairs and then running over the floor of the condo and then running up the stairs and then across the floor and up the stairs and across the floor. And we would watch him. And my dad's like, I need to meet that man. And my dad did. And then I had met him, and we just began a friendship. So even when we got engaged, it was down at the beach, and Larry rented a plane, and a big banner flew over. Both of our families were down there, and it said, Jen, will you marry me? Love, Larry. And he got down on his one knee that he has with a bottle of Dom Perignon and proposed to me. And it was just beautiful. It was amazing.
Wow. You're such a romantic, Larry.
He really is.
Probably more so than my wife.
Wow, I'm resisting the temptation to make every joke I can about getting down on one knee.
I know. But
wow.
He did, and
so
no excuses, right? He's getting down on the knee.
It's amazing. So how long did you guys know each other before you got married?
Well, we were friends for quite a bit, you know, just seeing him at the beach periodically. And then, you know, so we've been married for 6 years now, and you knew each other for, gosh, years before that.
Well, great. So tell us a little bit, about, let's see, what I want to ask. So first of all, so Larry's an amazing athlete. He's in amazing physical shape. And, oh, and I just got to tell everybody, this is just so funny. So we go out for dinner. You should see Larry on the crutches. I mean, they're part of him. And it's like he walks better with crutches than most people walk without. And so we go out for dinner, and we had to carry some chairs. We're at a hotel restaurant, and went out to the outdoor cafe. And, you know, people kind of move chairs around in large groups and stuff. So we grabbed a table, and we each had to grab a chair, a metal chair, and bring it pretty much across the courtyard. And I was going to grab two chairs, and, you know, I figured Jen would grab one, I'd grab the other two. And Larry just puts his crutch under his arm, grabs the other chair. I'm like, do you want me to grab that? He's like, no. And, okay. And I swear, Larry, you carried that chair better than I did. It was just, you managed the crutch without having to hold it. And I was amazed. And everybody's watching us. And, Jen, I totally got what you said in your experience very often, with everybody looking and it feeling like they're looking at us going, who are these two horrible people making that guy carry his own chair? And it's
absolutely.
Like, if they only knew.
Absolutely. And you know what?
Said a lot.
All the time. I'm glad you said that. I mean, at first I probably thought about it and was more cognizant about it, but if you were to ask Larry probably what he likes a lot about me and initially, like us meeting and getting together, was I just treated Larry like anybody else, just a straight-up normal person, because he is. I don't see any limitations. And so other people watching us, you know, especially when we go to buffet restaurants, not that we do that often, but you're carrying a tray, and Larry's carrying his own tray, and I'm just carrying my tray too. And, again, perceptions of other people might be like, wow, you know, what a mean person she is by making her husband schlep the tray across the, you know, dining hall or whatever. But, yeah, that's just kind of how we live life.
Wow. That's great. So, yeah, so we're talking about a man who's got, you know, 8% body fat at 54 years old. He's 5'11".
All right, I'm going to cut in. He's 53, and I better just say that
53.
So he doesn't have a...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yes.
But the
8%
body fat is true.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that correction.
That's all right, Mark. I was kind of holding my tongue there.
I thought I'd
I'm sorry. I
say something.
I know. I'm not too far behind you. I get it. So 53. 5'11", 125 without the leg, 155 with the prosthetic. And so you guys run your both of your records for running a mile is within about 2 minutes of each other, isn't it?
Larry runs, I mean, when he's running a pretty fast pace, he can do an 11-minute mile, which is really super fast even for regular able-bodied people. My mile, pretty fast one would be 8.5, 9-minute mile or so. So when he's running
wow.
this marathon, even Ballston, when Larry qualified for Ballston, he had a phone call from the race director asking him, do you want to start with a mobility impaired category, or your time was so good you could just start with regular able body folks? And we chose to start with the mobility impaired category just because of the masses of people that would be running if we would have gone with the able bodies. It was just a little easier. We were the first folks to start the whole Boston Marathon race, which was pretty amazing. We were able to see all the elite athletes run by us. Back to your
wow.
question. Larry's fat. He's fast.
Wow. So you were like the Grand Marshals.
Absolutely.
That's
we
great.
Were. And what he didn't share, too, is he actually shaved 17 minutes off of his time from the D.C. Rock and Roll Marathon to the Boston Marathon. And like he said, I really think it was in part due to the crowds and the excitement and the energy and the vibe. And we, you know, couldn't hit a wall because the crowd just wouldn't let us.
Wow. And how much time was between those two events?
Time-wise, so he got 5... 5:20 at the Boston Marathon and 5 hours and 37 minutes at the DC Rock and Roll Marathon, and those were a year apart.
So in a year, he shaved 15 minutes off his time.
Yep.
Wow.
And that's unheard of. I mean, from a marathon runner or athlete, if you shave a minute or two off, that's pretty incredible. And actually, the day that we ran Boston, it was kind of unseasonably warm, and we talked to a lot of folks afterwards, and they, you know, we talked to people who got 40 minutes worse than their personal record. And for him to shave off that much time when it was actually pretty warm that day was pretty impressive.
Wow. That's amazing, an 11-minute mile. I mean, because I remember what my mile time. First of all, I dreaded the anticipation of having to run a mile the first time in high school. I knew that in gym class or senior year, we were going to have to run a mile. I was like, oh, my God, that's torture. That's horrible. Why do I want to do that? And I ran a 16-minute mile. I walked half of it. It was just miserable. And I don't think
Absolutely.
It would be much better today.
No.
So, that's why I said before.
My time per minute is a little faster with the half marathon as opposed to the full marathon. I do most of my halves in about between 2:25 and 2:30.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, because Larry's humble, and you asked me the question in the beginning, you know, what didn't Larry say? Larry holds right now the world record for both the pending world record for fastest marathoner using those forearm crutches. So that's being reviewed with the World Record Committee in the UK.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yep.
Congratulations. I get to say congratulations about 95 things, I'm sure. Wow. It's so great because what I really got from you, Jim, when I originally spoke to you, was how much you love talking about Larry and just how much regard and admiration you have for him and him for you. And it's just it's so great.
Absolutely.
And it was just great being together with you guys as well the other night. So can I ask, I don't know if you can tell me, but I'm going to ask, you can decline to answer. Now you're both really nervous. What is he going to ask? Who is the former NFL, who's the former NFL football player that you inspired to run a marathon? Can you tell? If you can't, I respect that.
No, I can definitely tell, Mark, because he said it on the air. It was Brian Mitchell, who played for the Redskins and as well as the Eagles, and he has his own talk show on Comcast Sports Network, and he lost about probably a good 30-40 pounds over these last 6 months or so, and he looked at me and said, "Hey, you've just inspired me to run." A half marathon initially, and so I'm going to hold. I'm waiting a couple months, and then I'm going to shoot him an email and see where he is on it.
Wow! Oh, that's great. That's great.
So you know what, Mark? That's impressive. What's equally impressive too, Larry and I just did a whole Southeast road trip tour, and you know, just we put 2,000 miles on our car. So when we got to our destinations, after sitting, you know, 6 miles in the car, we tried to find like a park area to run and just to, you know, get out. release some energy. And we were in Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, and we noticed as we were walking, you know, the majority of folks were overweight and obese, but they were out there. They were out there walking, and that was amazing. And we, you know, we recognized that. And as we were finishing up our run, a lady came over and said, "Hey, you inspired me. Today I was only going to walk 2 laps around, you know, the park area, but because of you, I'm gonna walk 2 additional laps. So, you know, you got the NFL players, you've got the you know, overweight mom or whoever she was walking around the park who was equally as inspired. In fact, I took a picture. She wanted a picture of Larry and her so she could post on Facebook. So I'm sure Larry's on random Facebook pages throughout, you know, the country.
Sure. Wow. So tell me what did you have to sort of work through and get past, if anything, in making the decision really to marry a man who is an amputee? Because I think a lot of people are wondering, like, you know, wow, what must that be like? What did people say? What did other people say? What were you thinking? Did you hesitate? And all those things. How would you describe the process you went through?
Well, you know, just from knowing Larry first and being friends prior, it wasn't really a hard kind of transition to make. But I do remember having a conversation with my mom on the beach before Larry and I even started dating, saying, you know, and my mom said, I almost, you know, feel sorry for Larry, you know, or his wife when they get married, because they'll never be able to dance or have a wedding song. And I just kind of went along with her and thought, gosh, you're right, Mom. You know, I saw Larry at the beach but never saw him outside of that interacting in the environment. And, wow, that came back to bite both of us. You know, my mom and dad attended our wedding, and we had a wedding song, and Larry can dance like nobody else. You put on the song Footloose, and he's crazy on the dance floor. He's probably totally embarrassed right now. But so, you know, I didn't have to prepare for too much, probably what other people think, but I didn't worry about that. I mean, you get over that kind of quickly, and, you know, they're going to think what they're going to think.
Yeah, I guess, you know, love just doesn't know those things. Love
Absolutely.
Just knows what it wants, and it draws us to it, and there's just no denying that, and that's just beautiful.
And, yeah, absolutely. And, I'm sure there are some limited qualities in me that Larry saw that he had to overcome and prepare himself for before we got married as well. So,
Well, I won't ask you about those, Larry. That would be another show.
No comment.
So, wow.
I know. She knows
great,
I love her to death.
And it shows. When I see you guys, it's just like, wow, you know. So, and how long have you both been married?
We just celebrated our 6th anniversary, June 28th.
Wow. Very cool.
We're still newlyweds.
You're still newlyweds? You know what?
Absolutely.
It's really great because I had two cousins who did married forever, and they were, like, you know, in their retirement years. They've been married 50-some-odd years, and I always told them that it's like they're newlyweds, and I always admired their relationship. So, you know, you can remain newlyweds forever. It doesn't have to just be in your first, you know, 6 to 10 years. So, great. So let me ask you this, Jen. I want to ask you a little bit about your work as a coach, because you're an executive coach at the NIH, and since this is a coaching-related show, I just would be interested to talk a little bit about that. Most specifically, though, about how it relates, how the work that you do relates to our discussion about Larry, particularly with your book, Why It Matters, and what Larry's why is, which I alluded to earlier in the show. But just tell us briefly about the work that you do as an executive coach. And by the way, just for our listeners to know, I know this is usually a one-hour show, but because I have both Jen and Larry on, I knew that we were probably going to need to take a little more time. So we will be going past the top of the hour, which we are at now. So continue to stay tuned with us. And again, if you want to call in, the number is 646-716-9397. So go ahead, Jen. Tell us a little bit about the work you do, and then I want to bring that around to Larry's Why It Matters.
Yep, and it's kind of interesting. So I'm at the National Cancer Institute, so cancer, you know, is first and foremost a topic and a passion that both of us have and give back to, like, the different organizations, like Larry said. So I'm an internal coach, and our team uses the Sherpa Executive Coaching Process, which I was certified at the University of Georgia a year and a half ago and went through the process, and Brenda Corbett I guess we call her Mama Sherpa, who her and her husband, Carl Corbett, are in charge of the corporation, Sherpa, went through that process and just really liked it. And it's all about producing positive changes in business behavior in a fixed kind of time frame. And during it, we talked a lot about why it matters. And I was actually able to partner with Brenda Corbett to write the book, Why It Matters. And really, your why it matters is your own kind of personal thesis statement, if you will. It's a sentence that is the basis for every action you take, basically. And Larry said over a couple of times, you know, to prove a point. And that's been with Larry from early on. So your why it matters is something that kind of begins with you and you've had from when you were younger, and it carries, follows you all the way up to adulthood. And it really helps you. Once you understand what your why it matters is, it will help you understand why you do the things you do. And that's really what the book is just a format for folks to go through the process to find out what their why it matters is, and then to figure out, what am I going to do with this information now that I know it, and how might my behaviors change because I know this information. So Larry's why it matters, to prove a point, can be a beautiful thing. It can kind of be a superpower. Overused, it could not be so much, and that's kind of what we do with our clients too, is just to figure out personal weaknesses and maybe career-limiting behaviors, and help folks reach their own personal summit.
Wow, great. So Ashley, I'll ask you toward the end of the show where people can go to find that book if they're interested in reading it. So so what I'd like to know is, you know, Larry has this fierce desire for independence, and he's been extraordinarily successful at achieving that independence. And one thing that I'm curious about, Jen, if you can comment on, is what might be any potential downside to his fierce desire for independence that you've experienced?
Well, you know, it is this independence, and I think, you know, Larry was later, he got married later in life, and I think it was very much because of that independence, and Larry kind of was set in his ways a little bit, too, and operated kind of the way he was used to operating, and just after we got married, there were some things that we had to work through and adjustments that had to be made. And I think even Larry made mention, you know, how much he was doing coaching, too. And I was a baseball widow. Like, he was out coaching a lot, and I was home. So he was independently still doing some of those things. But came to the realization, like, okay, now I'm married, and things might need to adjust and change. It didn't happen overnight, I'm going to tell you. Let's just, like, you know, change behaviors don't happen overnight. It's a journey. And so he's still fiercely independent. And another word would be competitive. So being independent and competitive, you could, you know, beat to your own drum and might, you know, I'm just going to say it, railroad over people sometimes, but he doesn't do that. He balances it, like Philip called in to say. I mean, he's a huge role model in the community and giving back and a passionate person, but that independence and that competition can come off as intense sometimes. So if I were coaching Larry, we would work on intensity probably.
What do you think of that, Larry? What's your response to that?
It's hard for me to argue with that. To be quite honest with you, there has certainly been a transformation. I know how, you know, you get set in your ways after X number of years of being by yourself, and certainly I've learned to compromise. You compromise in the work place, but you also have to compromise at home too. And I think we have gone through, some adjustments over the years. And I think I have become a little bit more flexible, if you will, Mark, and not as inflexible or structured as you might have seen me, you know, 6-8 years ago.
Yeah. You know, isn't it interesting how sometimes our greatest strengths can be our greatest Achilles heel as well? Because that sense of intense structure is really what supported you throughout your life. And that competition is what made you, has what's really supported in making you the amazing athlete that you are, right? So it's interesting because I know in my work as a coach, people end up with similar challenges in that their strengths sometimes get in their way because that's just the way we're designed as human beings. We learn that something works, and we stick with it. And then sometimes we can apply it in situations where maybe something different would work, especially when there's another person involved. And that's just part of the way that we're designed as human beings. Do we always choose the same default behaviors, or can we become conscious and choose different ways of doing things? So what I'm really hearing there is that the challenges that you have are no different than the challenges that anyone else has. You know,
absolutely.
There's another layer to them, you know, but generally it's the same human challenges that any of us have in life. And your relationship with each other is certainly no different than anybody else's either. So very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I like how you said it, Mark, that your strengths, you know, we say this in coaching world too, your strengths overused definitely can be your weakness, which could be that career-limiting behavior that we try to work on with clients in order to get them to where they want to be and should be.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because I know for me, my greatest strength is my gift of gab. And the thing that has given me, that has gotten me into the most amount of trouble in my lifetime has been my big mouth and not knowing when to shut up. That's what I always heard as a kid. I always heard, Mark, you don't know when to shut up and your big mouth gets you in trouble, right? So of course, you know, as I've gotten older, I've honed that in a little bit. You know, you mature and you kind of learn how to channel all that stuff better. But we still get in our own way and get in trouble with those same sorts of things. So, you know, here I am. I get paid to talk for a living. And it's what I always used to get in trouble for as a kid. And it's funny, whenever I'm working with somebody and I'm involved in the conversation of, you know, how do you identify what your passion is in life and like what you're meant to grow up to be? And I always say, well, you know what? Don't just look at the things that you enjoyed doing as a kid. Look at the things that you got in trouble for doing. And you'll find a lot of clues as to what the contribution is you're trying to make in the world, and then figure out a way to make it. So some of you may remember when I interviewed a friend of mine who is a Fairfax County motorcycle cop here in Fairfax County, Virginia. And all the things that he got in trouble for, it all makes sense, but he's a cop now. You know, and I had a friend in school that I grew up with. He always got in trouble for reading, if you can imagine that. He'd sit there in math class, and he'd be reading novels that were way beyond his years because he was just really brilliant and smart. And it was a problem because instead of doing what he should be doing, all he wanted to do was read these books. And he's a lawyer now. So, you know, it all makes sense. So whatever you got in trouble for, it's probably what you're meant to do.
So Mark, mentioned, you know, we mentioned Larry's Why It Matters to prove a point, and it's interesting because mine, if you don't mind me sharing, is to prove my worth.
Sure.
And it relates so much to the marathon story, it's not even funny, just even looking back in hindsight. So Larry qualified for the Boston Marathon, and I didn't. So I didn't have an earned numbered bib. I had a bib that said guide. And I got to tell you, I'm more proud of that bib that said guide because I was able to prove my worth to Larry, to help him, to assist him, to be with him, looking for potholes or little divots in the road so he wouldn't fall, and to get his water for him and to get his gels and his goo or whatever he needed to complete that race. It just was all tied up in my Why It Matters to prove my worth. So, again, it can be a good thing, and it can be a bad thing at times too.
Interesting. And you talked with me a little bit about my Why It Matters. And what did you say it was? To get noticed?
To be noticed. I thought, you know, after we had a conversation, and immediately I think that's what you came up with was your, you know, one short statement. But even in our book on page 65, there are some Why It Matters examples. And to be noticed is one of those. But to appear knowledgeable, to avoid failure, to be a catalyst, to be a dominant force. So those are just some examples of what that personal thesis statement could be.
Interesting. So. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I have the book in front of me, and I'm seeing some others that I relate to. To be loved, to teach, all those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one does not just need to have one why.
Yeah, so Larry's main Why It Matters, and for those of you who might buy the book, it's really, Mark, to to police. And if you just hear me out for a little bit, Larry, you know, being an amputee, Larry needs to scan and police his environment all the time just to see how he can operate in his environment and what modifications or adjustments might need to happen to make him, you know, fit seamlessly into the environment. I mean, when we go into a restaurant, you and I would go in and we would just sit at the table, you know, where the host or hostess would seat us. Larry, you know, goes into a restaurant and he needs to think, oh, is there a wall right near the table where I can put my crutches? So he polices a lot. And that's a good thing and it's a bad thing. I mean, it can be, for an example today, we were at a farmer's market and they were selling fresh broccoli and Larry felt the need to tell the owner that broccoli was spelled wrong. So, I mean, you know, he polices everything and whether or not the owner needed to know that broccoli was spelled wrong and didn't have two C's, you know, I don't know. But Larry felt
that's
the
funny.
Need that he had to say that. So you can see in that kind of illustration where it can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing.
I was trying to be helpful.
He was trying to be helpful. He was policing.
I wonder how many other people noticed
that
mistake but wouldn't open their mouth.
I'm with you on that. I would have pointed out the misspelling in the sign tip.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate somebody's on my side.
And it's interesting because it actually – it relates to, we were talking about at dinner with the CVI assessment that I mentioned halfway through the show, looking at what I'm predicting your type to be. We're gonna have you take the CVI. But,
oh, I'm going to
take it. I said that your primary is the innovator, and that's the innovator. It's the problem solver and the part of us that always wants to just create a better way of doing things. And that's your innovator that scans and polices things. You know, and I can relate to some of that too in that it's like almost everywhere I go, I'm looking for an electrical outlet to plug my phone in. You know, it's like, okay, I want to sit over there because there's an outlet. I can't go to that place because they don't have outlets near the table, you know, and it's like a little ridiculous at times too. But, excuse me. So, wow. So great. So as we begin to wrap, Jen, if listeners wanted to take a look at your book, Why It Matters, The Sherpa Guide to What You're Looking For, by Brenda Corbett and you, where can they go to look for that?
So I guess the best place would be the Sherpa website. It's Sherpa, S-H-E-R-P-A, coaching, coaching.com.
Great.
Or they can contact Sherpa, info@sherpacoaching.com, or they could call 513-232-0002.
Great, good. Well, thank you for that. And then, Larry, I want to give you the opportunity to give a shout-out to the organization that you love so much and work with, and that would be Special Love, Inc., And so why don't you tell folks how they can reach out to Special Love, Inc. if they want to get involved or make a donation or even refer somebody to their services or use their services.
Absolutely. I think Special Love has an excellent website, and probably the easiest way to reach out to them is through the website and the their address as well as their phone numbers listed on that website. And that website address is www.speciallove, but it's only one L, so it's specialove.org. And as I said, we're always looking for additional volunteers. We're looking for donors, any which way you can help. We're just a very small organization and we think we do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Great, very good. Well, thank you for that. So I really encourage everybody listening to go check out Special Love and go check out how you can get involved, help them, be helped by them. And then also Jen and Brenda's book, Why It Matters, The Sherpa Guide to What You're Looking For. And I'll actually put both of those resources up on my website, within the write-up of this show. So when people listen to the archives, they'll have that. So if you missed that information, that will be on my website within the next 48 hours. So great. So let me just ask each of you, let me start with you, Jen. What would you say is sort of the bottom line message that you'd like to leave listeners with tonight?
So the bottom line message is, you know, whatever space you're in, I just really think that people can achieve their personal best by just starting slowly. So if someone's out there listening and was motivated by Larry's story and was inspired by it, just think about what's that next small step that can get me to that large goal that I want to achieve, and just start being consistent with that to get to where you want to be. And also to slow down long enough to think. I think we also live in a society that's on constant go, and you need to reflect and sit down and kind of have an inventory with yourself. So what is that thing that I want to do? And then what might that look like? How might I get there? And just spend some time in reflection and thinking about what you might need to do to get there. And then, of course, finding your why it matters, too. I mean, what drives me? Why do I do the things that I do? And, you know, whether that's through finding your why it matters or taking your core values assessment or whatever information is, people like data about themselves. And I love that because the more data you have about yourself, the more you can use that data in a positive way in order to impact others. So that's what my message would be.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Jen. And then back to you, Larry.
Mine's probably a little shorter than that, Mark. mine is really never give up. And I'll take a part of what Jen just mentioned. And, you know, I think people, especially individuals that have been diagnosed with cancer, suffered a wound in a war or in a car accident or whatever the case may be. You know, despite those obstacles, despite that situation, never give up, and start small with some of your goals. You know, if it is somebody that if you've always wanted to run, don't set your sights for a half marathon or a full marathon. Set your sights for a 5K and gradually build up. You know, and train for a 5K. Once you attain that 5K, maybe a 10K, and then a half marathon or whatever the case may be. But I'm a true believer in goal setting. And, you know, you want your short-term goals. You've got your medium range goals as well as your long-term goals. And set realistic goals, too. Again, I think for any individual out there that's dealing with an obstacle, don't give up. You know, just dig deep and don't give up.
Great. I'm not sure how much shorter than Jen's that was, but it was really, really great and inspiring.
Thank you, Mark. I was telling you. Jeez.
I've got your back. I've got both of you.
Thank
back.
You.
So you. I scored a point with each of you there.
Thank you.
So certainly. Well, listen, this has been really, really terrific, and it's fun getting to know you. This having you on the show is just really exciting and really great. So I just want to thank you both so much for being here tonight.
Thank you so much for having us. It was amazing, like you said, just spending time Friday evening meeting you and talking with you, and just, again, being on the show. This has been amazing, and just to share the space with my husband and sharing our stories and a little bit of our life with you, it's been great. Thank you.
And, Mark, we greatly appreciate the invitation, too. We've certainly enjoyed our time and look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Great, certainly. So thank you again. And as we wrap up, again, if you are interested in any of following up on any of that information will be on my website, so you can get in touch with Special Love. You can take a look at Jen's book, Why It Matters. You can also take the CVI assessment on my website for free, and it will give you an amazing report all for free. And just go to markshall.com and click the assessments tab, and you'll see several assessments that I do with clients, and you can take the CVI there. So as I wrap up, feel free to mark your words if you'd like. If you have feedback for us that you'd like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network, then just click the follow button and send us a message. If you want to send feedback directly to me, or you have a question, or you want to suggest a show topic, go to markmywordsradio.com. Click the home and contact button and scroll to the bottom and fill in the contact form. I hope you enjoyed the past hour and 20 minutes and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. And I really look forward to speaking with you all again on my next show, which will be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 Sundays from now. And you can check the Mark My Words website again to get more details about that show. So thank you all very much for listening tonight. That'll wrap us for tonight. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words.